Today we have a very, very special guest, but before I introduce our guest and before I tell you about him and what he's up to, I want to talk to you guys about Adam and Eve, who have decided to sponsor this show, and we're super excited about it. AdamandEve.com says the best part of staying at home is playing at home, and right now you can take advantage of the downtime and choose almost any one item for 50% off, and when you do, you'll also receive free shipping delivered discreetly right to your door. Just remember to use offer code ABOUT, that's code ABOUT at checkout. AdamandEve.com has thousands of products to make you glad that you're staying at home, and sex toys make staying at home so much more enjoyable. Hell, even shopping from home is more enjoyable when you're shopping for sex toys. So right now, if my listeners go to AdamandEve.com and use code ABOUT, that's 50% off almost any one item for free shipping as well. And with that, I'm going to introduce our guest, Liam Riley. Liam, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've had porn stars, adult stars on the show before. We've had Lisa Ann. We've had Sherry DeVille. We've had, who else have we had? We've had Abella Danger, your friend, Brandy Love. Yeah, she was raving about you. So we've had a bunch of straight female porn stars on, but we've never had a gay male porn star on, which is ironic because this is a podcast hosted by a gay male, and we talk about gay male stuff. So I do want to get into your adult film career, but before we do, you have like a really interesting backstory, because you were like the hotshot cheerleader growing up, and you parlayed that into a career in adult entertainment. So can you just tell me a little bit about your background in cheering and dancing and what that was like and where you grew up?
Yeah, so I grew up in Los Angeles in the San Fernando Valley, and even from like a young age, I expressed like an interest in dance. Like I would perform for like my grandparents in their like kitchen and stuff like that, and put on like little numbers and shows and stuff like that. And then it wasn't until like elementary school and then middle school, I got into like dance teams at school, and then I was doing show choir because I wanted to be a singer too. And then in high school, I was doing dance team. And then I was friends with a few girls who competed on all-star competitive, like cheer squads, which are like club sports outside of school. And they invited me to one of their practices one day. So I kind of just tagged along. And then I kind of jumped in and realized that like I was a way better cheerleader than a dancer at that point. Like cheerleading just made all more sense to me. And yeah, I just developed cheerleading as a career. And then with that, like social media started like picking up, like Instagram started becoming popular, especially in cheerleading. Cause like at that time, from what I remember, like around 2012, like only cheerleaders were on Instagram. Like I remember a time like Android users like weren't allowed on Instagram, like only iPhone users and like cheerleaders, like we were all over the popular page, and like that really got me like a following on social media, and then boom.
and then it all happened. But have you seen the show on Netflix? What was that show about the cheerleading?
Yeah, I'm actually friends with a lot of them. Like cheerleading is very, very such a small community, so even kids from like multiple states, like we would all gather at these cheer competitions, and those were your friends, those were people you knew online, because you didn't relate to kids in your normal school, and most kids end up getting homeschooled because cheer becomes such a part of your everyday life, like 24/7.
But there's not really any money in it, right? Which had to have been part of the reason why you decided to go into adult film.
Yeah, I mean, during that time, definitely no money was being invested like to a cheerleader. But then with social media, then cheerleaders started getting popular as an influencer. So then deals, and then people were making bows that cheerleaders would sell with their autographs and stuff. So money, very, very small money started coming in. And then you're like, oh, wow, I could do something with this.
How tall are you?
I'm 5'7".
So were you like a tumbler? Were you like flipping? Like what did you do while you were cheering?
Yeah, so most small framed boys like myself, and usually they are the gay ones. They are the tumblers. What like got me like a little bit of a following and popularity was that like people liked that I was a small framed boy, but like I also liked to make these flying videos with my friends, and like it wasn't common for a boy to be a flyer. So that, and I used to just post them on Facebook, and like then likes just started coming in, and then people just started like, who's this boy? But yeah, I was a Tumblr slash flyer, but I could do all of it.
What kind of following were you able to build up while you were a cheerleader? Like number wise, it was most on, cause this was like early 2000s. Like Instagram wasn't really like that big yet. It was like Facebook, right?
Yeah. So like during that time, like, so I had my first Instagram, which was like at like 125 around 2013. Like I had 125K in 2013. But when I, and like the reason for that was because like, because I lived in LA, I had the access of like getting to hang out with Viners who were getting popular at the time.
Vine? So, like, oh, Vine. Okay.
So like I was hanging out with influencers, and like we would kind of do these like videos and stuff like that. But like little did I know like that Vine and like these people would end up becoming like actual like big celebrities, you know, like to this day, you know, they're working influencers. And yeah, so like I was like growing a following, but then when I turned it into my adult star account, a lot of the backlash started getting to me a little bit, and I deleted that first Instagram, but thank God I didn't delete my Twitter. So I kept that. And then now I have the Instagram that was the second one after that time.
The original one. Yeah. I can't imagine like, and we'll get into like the adult stuff in a little bit. I can't imagine some of the hate has got to be just like unbearable. I mean, we, and Alana knows it too, like we receive probably a fraction of what you receive online just being employees at Barstool, and it's, it can really like get to you, even, and even though people say it doesn't, it definitely does. But you were hanging out with these people in LA, you had built up a following. At what point, and then you, so you're 20 years old, right? Like you're like obviously an out gay guy who's a cheerleader. You were, when did you come out, I guess is my first question.
I mean,
or did you never even really have to?
Yeah, I really didn't have to. I mean, like, yeah, it was like a struggle, like for me to come to terms with, and like a lot of people around in my life. But like, I think like, it's always just been that thing. Like I am very like feminine in my everyday, like just without even like thinking or holding it. So I think just like everybody knew around me before I even knew. And like, you know, it, a lot of people also made it very easy, and cheerleading made it very easy to be around people who were just like me and who shared the same interests, and I could completely be my most flamboyant self, you know.
I love it. Yeah, it's not like you're playing, you know, like football or something. Yeah, like that, know, where it's difficult
like cheerleading with like a bunch of boys just like me who are trying to find themselves, and you know, we got to be these friends, and like we love cheerleading.
That's great. It's funny you say that, because I actually interviewed a guy yesterday, and his show aired on Tuesday, so this will come out tomorrow, but Devin Rouse, and he's a 22-year-old NASCAR driver who's gay, and he came out, and I was like, I can't fucking imagine.
Yeah, right.
What, like, a nightmare, like going down to like Alabama and like getting on the track and having people like yell things to you. It's,
oh my God,
it's gotta be
for it.
It's got to be a nightmare. But it was actually, I was reading about when you did decide to make the switch, it was a big controversy because you had built up this following and there were a lot of people that looked up to you. So for you to go to adult film, people were, I guess, upset with that. So how did you actually get into it? Did you seek it out or were you recruited? Because your first film was with Helix Studios.
Yeah. So during that time, I thought like, it's just like, it's fun to look back on now the way it all kind of turned out and like how it worked out, you know. Initially, so I had a following. I also, like, with that, like I was getting into the whole influencer kind of thing, like hanging out with influencers, like they were teaching me the steps. So like across all platforms I was on, Tumblr being one of them at the time, which was also popular, so I was constantly posting on there, like reblogging, you know. And I come across another adult star who was very popular on Tumblr at the time. And who was that?
Yeah.
His name was Evan Parker.
Got it.
So Evan Parker was very popular. And then I found him on Twitter. We started kind of engaging, like sliding in the DMs, shall they say. And something about it caught interest to me, like the whole like doing adult films. And it wasn't the first time that I had been approached with it. Like I had gone out at that point because I had just turned 18. So I was like going out to the clubs in LA, like, you know, brand new gay in WeHo, living his best life. So like that comes with that kind of culture, you know, like people are going to approach you like, you're cute, you're young, do you want to do adult films? At the time I was like, no, never. And I went to a party that I was invited to by the owner of Helix Studios, and he approached me like a year prior, and I had said no.
How old were you when he approached you?
Like just had turned 18.
Got it. And who was approaching you in the clubs? Was it just like, what clubs were you going to? And like, who was coming
out? At that point, it probably could have just been random people who like wanted to be like agents or whatever, you know?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Now that like I work in the industry, I'm like, who even were those people, you know?
Yeah.
So thank God I didn't take that offer, you know? So then I started exchanging DMs with Evan Parker, and then something about me had wanted to do it, but I was still a cheerleader, mind you. I had exchanged with Helix Studios, and we had kind of worked out an agreement where like I would do something like that, right? Fly home for Thanksgiving break of 2013, and then I had filmed my first scene with Evan Parker.
What was the agreement? Was it like, I'm going to do a solo scene, like I'm going to jerk off on camera, or was it like a full-blown, like we're going to fuck, blowjob, oral kind of deal?
The deal was that like I was a cheerleader, but I wasn't going to release my scene because I was in the middle of my competing season till after the World Championships. So we would film it that Thanksgiving break, but nothing would come out. And then in the middle of like that, like I had a falling out with my cheer program, and I just like 180'd in like January, February, and I had messaged Helix and I was like, let's just like do it. Like, let's go for it right now.
What was those initial conversations like with Helix? It's the owner reaching out to you, and is he just like, hey, like, you're a cute guy, do you want to do this? Is there like, does he dangle a dollar amount in front of you and you're like, ooh, this is enticing? Or is it more like, here's the lifestyle you can have? Like, how do they like lure in a guy into the industry to like get involved? Or I don't want to use the word lure because lure is derogatory. I want to say, how do they like entice you to get involved?
Definitely at that time, probably Evan Parker was probably the most enticing thing for me. Cause like, I just literally had a crush on this boy that I wanted to meet. And the idea that like, they could set this up, like, I was like, who's this cute boy? He's popular. Like, he's like a huge porn star. I don't know what about it. Like, but Evan Parker was my end goal for me, you know?
I love that. Your end goal is you go, oh no, I just wanted to fuck Evan Parker. That's literally all it is. Reason,
like that was just like what I wanted to do. No. So we were DMing and he was like, we can make this happen. And then later Helix and me had started following each other. So then they started the conversation with me about it. Like, let's pursue, like, do you really want to pursue this kind of thing? But Casey Roman, who is the lead director at Helix, was the person that I was in communications with before I met. I had met Keith a year before, but then I had like re-met him like after.
Who's Keith?
I'm the owner of Helix Studios.
Keith is the owner. And while you were doing this, did any of your friends or family know, or was this you doing this on the sly?
When I was talking to them, my core group, because I was living in Florida at the time, they knew about it. And then when I came home, nobody knew about it. I had filmed the scene and then I told everybody about it.
Well, who did you tell first, friends or family?
Family, of course.
And what was their reaction?
You know, it's just gonna be what everybody's reaction is. It's obviously not like first option, but like my family, for me, we are supportive and like 100% behind each other no matter what it is, you know? So this was just like me kind of being extreme and crazy. Like I have always been, like, you know.
And you're 18 years old when this is happening.
Like 19 at this point. Like I probably just like turned 19.
Do you remember what you got paid?
Probably $1,000 for my first scene.
And it was sex in your first scene?
Yeah, but it was, so my first scene was with Evan Parker, and then
you reached your end goal.
So it was like, yeah, my end goal. So they had set up the scene, and for my first time, to make it super easy, it wasn't this whole giant production, everybody's kind of in a room. It was kind of that one-on-one, kind of amateur, handheld kind of scene. And that was kind of just how we just filmed it. It was just a real interaction. I was meeting him for the first time, and you know, we filmed our scene. But it wasn't my first actual scene that debuted like my whole career. It was like a scene that was like later in the vault that like was my actual first scene ever filmed.
And then after you did that first scene, was it one of these things, like, I remember I was talking with Lisa Ann about this, and I was like, after you did your first scene, like, she described it, it was like romantic almost. She's like, I was in Beverly Hills, like, we drove up this long, winding driveway, and there was the set, and I came out, and I was the star. But my question to her was, like, was it one of these things where it happened, and you're like, oh, fuck, I can't do that again? And she was like, sweetie, she's like, it happened once, and I was addicted. She's like, I love everything about it. I love the lights. I love the camera. I love the attention. Did you have a similar experience? Because you're still, I would assume, because you're still involved in the industry, you're still doing well.
It was like every time something new happened, it was like a high for me. Like, it was just the best feeling that, like, you know, I loved it. The whole, like she said, like the sets and like the people and like you're the star and like, you know, like it's so nice. And for me, I felt that like glamorous kind of like lifestyle that, like, you know, I like it.
Do you get, you only bottom in your scenes, right? Mostly?
Mostly, except like I did this one topping scene. It was like a parody in gay porn. Most adult stars will debut their first bottoming scene, but I did this whole debuting my like first topping scene.
That's so funny. And do bottoms and tops get treated differently on set? Are you like, the top's like, oh, you're just like a dick, like whatever, you can come over here, but the bottoms get treated like better? Or is that just something I made up in my head?
I don't know. I think it's all about kind of like how you hold yourself. Cause like, you know, like for me, not that I'm a diva, but you know, like I like to like probably play it up a little bit more than, you know, like a macho or like a top, you know, who's just like, yeah, sure. Like I'm here. Like, you
right. Yeah.
For me, I'm like, oh my God, I'm on set today. Like, you know, for me, it's probably, we're probably having two different experiences or fantasies of what's happening, you know? And I choose to make my experience the best experience that I possibly can, because at the end of the day, you know, like Abella says, we're not putting our butthole on the internet for nothing.
Right. Now, do you still work with Helix? Because there's been some controversy around them recently.
Yeah, no, I haven't worked with them since like 2013. I mean, I really was just with them for my first 6 months of my career.
And just so people listening know, some of the controversy was around their recruiting practices and getting young models to do scenes. Now, you were recruited when you were 18, but I would imagine that the process started a little bit before that. In your experience, what is any of the, like, the comments that are going around saying it's predatory true, or did you find it more of a wholesome legal type recruitment situation?
You know, like, I can say that, like, you know, I'm not gonna say everything that people are saying aren't true, you know, like there are things, you know, that should probably be held accountable. But I mean, you know, as far as my own personal experience, I've never felt that, like, you know, anything was like out of bounds for me, you know, like, and I hate to talk about on other people's experience, because like that's unfortunate that you had that, you know. But in my own experience and the way that people dealt with me, you know, it was only in the most professional manner, you know. And I think what I want to kind of express to people is that, like, when I first went to Helix, like before and like anything really, I had my stepdad come down to the mansion and meet Keith Miller, like the owner, like my stepdad. And like, you know, we have family in law, so we know if shit were to hit the fan, like I'm well taken care of, in a sense that, like, you know, like don't come and fuck with me. So I brought my step down for that, you know, to reassure him that, you know, like I have a family, I have a support, like you don't want to cross these lines, you know.
And is that, and you brought them down to support you and almost as a show of force because you were afraid that if you didn't, they would take advantage of you?
You know, just like whatever it may have been, it was just in my mind at the time, you know, I'm so young and I trust my stepdad more than anybody, that I felt like I had to introduce him to somebody who I potentially was going to work for, you know.
Did you ever meet Brian Singer, the actor who would hang around with Helix guys? What's he like in person? Because he's in some deep shit too.
Again, you know, like, I can't say, it sucks that people have these things, you know, these experiences with these people. And, you know, I have met him. I have, you know, been to the house. And, you know, again, nothing has ever crossed the lines. I've never been one of those boys in the hot tub. And, you know, like, I know when I need to make my exit, you know.
Right. You're never the last to leave the party.
No, never. You know, because I don't know. For me, like, it's just better that I leave with my friends and, like, you know, I like to go to bed at night.
Right.
You won't even catch me out anymore, you know. But
that is a culture. That is a culture, though, right? I mean, partying and drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, they're ugly, and, you know, things happen, and especially at these Hollywood parties. You know, I'm from LA. I've been in the scene since I was literally the day that I turned 18. I went to Tiger Heat. You know, like, I have met, like, and I've been around, and, you know, I just know when enough is enough and when I have to go. It's not even that these high power people, it could be anybody. Like, I have seen all people of, like, the system do, like, the craziest things, you know, that probably you shouldn't be doing.
This is really interesting, and we're going to talk more about it in a second. But before we do, I need to talk to you guys about HelloFresh. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit, and they cut out the stressful meal planning trips to the grocery store so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes or less. HelloFresh offers 25 plus recipes to choose from every week, from vegetarian meals to craft burgers to extra special gourmet options. There's something for everyone to enjoy, with all the recipes designed and tested by professional chefs and nutritional experts to ensure deliciousness and simplicity. HelloFresh has also been named Newsweek's most trusted meal kit company of 2021, with over 4 million households served. HelloFresh is also 28% cheaper than shopping at your local grocery store and 72% cheaper than a restaurant meal without sacrificing the quality. Guys, I use this stuff every week. It gets sent to the office and I love it. I bring it home. It's easy to make. It's quick. It saves me money. And I feel like an adult. There's something nice about cooking your own meal and having it come out right. And HelloFresh makes that very easy to do. So right now, my listeners can go to HelloFresh.com/outandabout12 and use code outandabout12 for 12 free meals, including free shipping. Again, go to HelloFresh.com/outandabout12 and use code outandabout12 for 12 free meals plus free shipping. All right, back to Liam Riley. Yeah, so, like, you say you've seen, like, all sorts of crazy things. Did you get guys, like, sliding into your DMs all the time? Like, people from all different walks of life? Like, have you done escorting in the past? Like, have you used your... Because I know, like, Asa used to do escorting. She'd talk about, I know, like, a few other girls who I'm friends with used to. I don't know if that was prevalent in the gay porn industry or if that's more specific to females. And there's no judgment here. I'm just literally, literally curious about it.
I'm a huge supporter of all sex work. So I know everybody in all types of work and the working girls, shall we say, you know. But no, it's not, unfortunately, a service that I offer. I do like to offer, like, webcam shows to offer, still give kind of that boyfriend experience. But, like, for me, like, I'm a very small boy, you know, like, I'm very petite, like, in weight and height. And, like, for me, I just don't feel safe, or, like, I don't know how I would be able to protect myself if something were to, like, you know, get crazy, shall we say?
Yeah.
But, you know, so, like, it's just not worth it to me. I do get those messages. I do get people all the time asking for a weekend with me, you know, and, like, I do find it quite flattering, you know, that people would even want to spend, you know, even a dollar or a few, you know, you know, it's a nice, very flattering feeling. But, like, you know, and sometimes I wish I was that person, because, you know, sometimes it is tempting, but it's just not something I feel like I can go through with.
What kind of money do you get offered for a weekend away?
Probably not as much as, like, you know, like, a weekend with Asa Akira, like, I can, you know, like, but, you know, it's very generous.
That's interesting. And it's also interesting too, because I feel like you've had success in the industry on film. I feel like a lot of those boys who are in the hot tub with Brian Singer and these people who may have, like, the grape being dangled in front of them, like, look what you could have, but then don't make it into the industry. Maybe they fall back on escorting and maybe they fall back on these other things. And it seems like, especially in the gay community, that's much more prevalent than people think.
Yeah, I think it could be for a whole bunch of different reasons. You know, people do it for all types of reasons, honestly. But I mean, like, I think the fact that I don't do it just makes it a little bit more alluring.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it people like still fantasize, like, oh my God, I wonder what that's like. Or I don't know, for me, at least, that's in my mind how I try to like cope with it, I guess, or I don't know.
Do you have a like a flesh jack out of your asshole? Or your mouth or something?
Yes,
or
did I do. I am an official Flesh Jack boy. You can find me on fleshjack.com.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, so they can experience a little bit of what it's like. They'll just have to close their eyes or use some VR goggles. but yeah, no, that's super interesting to me. And then the other thing I wanted to ask, I have so many questions. I'm just so interested in this. You left Helix when you were how old and what year?
I want to say... I left Helix like in 2013, and I was probably then at the time maybe like 20.
And that's like, it's like aging out almost of Helix, because they like 18, 19, 20, 21 year old guys, which sounds crazy, but it's true. So after you left Helix, where did you go?
I went to Cocky Boys.
You went to Cocky Boys. And what was your experience like there, and what kind of scenes were you doing compared to what you're doing when you first entered the business?
So... at Helix, I was doing a lot of, like, I guess that teen work. So, like, I was doing, like, boyfriend experience, kind of a lot of that. You know, like, I was a fortune teller, you know, very
fortune
fun stuff.
Teller.
I was a workout buddy. You know, I was a workout buddy. You know, like, I read boys' palm, like, a palm, and I was like, oh, yeah, I see the future. Boom, you know? But then later, like, in, so when I made the move to Cocky Boys, not only did I go from living in LA, then again, I introduced my stepdad to Jason, who is the owner of Cocky Boys. They weren't able to meet in person, but they did have a phone call with each other, because at that time, I was going to move my whole life from LA to work in New York for Cocky Boys.
Now, had you made good money at this point? And what was that conversation like between your stepdad and the owner of Cocky Boys? Did you listen in on it?
No, I didn't.
Interesting. I wonder if it was more of like a legal perspective, or if it was like just I want to know what my kid's getting into type of deal.
Probably a little bit of both, and just like more of a deal of like, how can we make this like the best, you know?
Right. And then at that point you leave Helix, were you like the star of Helix at this point? Were you rich yet? Like what are we talking here? Are we still struggling?
No, I was doing fairly well. I was at that point a working model, you know. I had done a lot of great scenes, and at that, like, a lot of talked about scenes. A lot of my scenes started winning, you know, at the award shows and stuff. Like, my debut scene ended up winning like best sex scene the entire year. And then, like, with that, like, the notoriety in porn, people were so interested on who this cheerleader turned adult star was. So, like, everybody was starting to Google me. So analytics and like my numbers in social media were starting to go up again.
Have you had people reach out to you in cheerleading who have maybe said some bad things or disparaged you in the past and apologized? Or is that part of your life just like, fuck that, I'm over it?
It's still a huge part of me. Like, I follow a lot of cheerleaders. So a lot of cheerleaders have also came back after the whole wave. So I have had those conversations with people where now it's like, they see the growth of the person. So they're like, we're so proud of you. They see it now, not just for like that little thing that like they thought it was. And like that, like I made it into like a whole career, and you know, I'm doing well because of it. You know, I'm not one of those cases where, you know, people think what happens to porn stars, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting too, because especially talking with, and granted, I've only talked to very successful porn stars, most of them female. So they have a different experience than people who may not have been as successful. And a lot of the times, what I've found from talking to people is that they get into the industry either A, because they, like you, they have a genuine interest in it and they have an end game and they want to do it, or B, there's some sort of, it's out of necessity, whether that be, you know, some sort of traumatic childhood event that happened, or like in the case of Lisa Ann, who's a good friend of ours, she got into the industry because she got kicked out of her house at 16. So she started dancing and she said, you know, I need to make money. One thing led to another, and that's that. Looking back on it now, you're a 28-year-old guy. Is there a piece of advice that you would give your younger self before you got into the industry?
Before?
Yeah, before and then during or after, whatever you think. It's a good question, huh?
I don't know. Like, as far as like the way that it all turned out, like I wouldn't like change any way that it kind of worked out. You know, like I felt like a lot of people, for some reason, you know, whatever it may be, they found like a genuine interest in me and like they really looked out for me. And again, I can't say my experience has been like everybody else. And I'm just so grateful for that, you know, and I'm thankful for people, whether it was like small periods of time that they were there, but you know, like, you know, they looked out. And, you know, I expressed to people very upfrontly. And I was thinking about this today. I was thinking about everything. And I was like, I had just always been very upfront about like what I wanted in the end goal, you know, like whether it was like, I want to win, I want to be successful, I want to reach X amount of followers by the end of this year. You know, like the thing that like I learned was like set goals for yourself and just cross them off along the way, you know. And then by the end of it, you're like, wow, like I did everything that I wanted, you know.
What's the goal now?
The big goal for me right now is I potentially want to audition for VH1's RuPaul's Drag Race.
You should. You know, I have, I know Carson Kressley, and he's been on the show a couple times. He did my show last year, and then he did it again this year. We're going to have him on for Pride, but you definitely should. And I actually saw your Instagram. You so in drag. You look amazing. Yeah.
So, like, I kind of now, like, again, like Madonna, I've learned that, like, rebranding as a person and growing is like very, very important. So like, it's interesting that now I find myself that I eventually want to write a book, and like my life has gone from sheer porn to drag, you know, like it's just like, it's really interesting how like everything's kind of manifested and worked together, from like being a dancer to learning about social media and business. And then it's like all developing into like what I can create in this drag persona, you know?
I think that's a great idea, and I think you'll find success in it too. And you can also incorporate some of your tumbles into,
you know, into all of it. Like,
but it hasn't. I'm sure it hasn't all been like sunshine and roses, right? Like part of Lisa Ann's book was her childhood was very tough. Like, what was your biggest struggle? Like, is there some skeletons in the closet that may have like turned you into the person you are, that drove you to the career you're at? Like, what's the salacious part of the book that you're gonna write?
I think the whole before, like, everything before cheerleading is, like, I get, like, a lot of people say it stems from the childhood, you know, the way that we come out. And I now learn not to dwell on it, but to, like, look back on it and appreciate it. But, you know, like, that entire life, because it was a lifetime ago now, but that life before cheer, I just remember was, like, this, like, I try to be such a happy person now, in my life now. Because I remember everything before that was just like miserable, sad, and just like I was like every day just crying about like every, because like life was not perfect and rainbows, like you say now, you know. It was definitely a triggering time, you know. I grew up in the Valley, very poor, you know, like I grew up in Pacoima, North Hills, like that area, it's very bad. And I was just like that poor Hispanic little kid who wanted to be gay, who wanted to dance, you know. Me and my dad obviously had an estranged relationship, and then my dad later passed away from drug overdose and stuff like that. So like it was, and then after that, then I was able to fully develop and become myself and then re-fix my relationship with my family, and then that was settled, and then boom, I was able to be me.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I'm the eldest of four with like step siblings now.
Holy moly. Eldest of four with step siblings. Did you get bullied growing up? Was that part of like, obviously, you know, you grew up poor and this and that. Was it like bad bullying because you are a little bit more effeminate? Was it just the typical childhood angst that, you know, made you unhappy, or like, what was it?
I think it was the angst. And then like, just family, like my family stuff was like, obviously not perfect either. Like,
right.
Because my dad and stuff like that, like, and drugs, you know, they can really create a toxic environment all around. But as far as like bullying, I think a lot of it is also social angst, like you said, and that's a good way to describe it, because like anytime like a masculine male just like even walked near me just intimidated me so much. So I think sometimes maybe it was just that. But as far as like people like physically like saying things to me, I don't think was like a thing for me. But like in my mind, I felt like everybody around me was talking about me. And, you know, like maybe there were a few things that I would hear a sly, you know, people would obviously say, you know, during those times, it was early 90s, 2000s. So of course we were going to say gay, fag, you know. And like, even then, during those times, a kid like that young before it was popular to be gay, like I didn't know what it was or didn't want to be or like gay or, you know, like, you know.
Yeah. And I also think it's like specific to when you say you think people are talking about you. I think that's very specific to like the gay experience because it's ingrained in you. Like mm-hmm. for me, like because you're hiding that you're gay, like even if you're outwardly gay, like internalized, you're hiding it. You're constantly thinking like, what are people saying about me? What do they really think? What do they think this and that? And like straight people don't have to deal with that. But I think that like, I still deal with it today. Like, what does this person think? What do they not think? Whatever. So I'm glad that you've overcome that and you seem to be, you know, thriving. And with that, another question I have is, what do you think the most common misconception about gay adult film stars is?
I don't know. It's whatever your conception, like, I don't know. A lot of people think a lot of different things about adult film stars. You know, it's interesting because I'm friends with a lot of female adult stars, you know, top, like Bella Danger being my best friend in the world, you know? And, you know, like, we've had conversations, you know, that like a lot of people won't understand what she does for work, you know? And in my mind, sometimes I'm like, you know, like embrace it, love it, you know, like that's what it is, you know, that's who we are. And like, you know, but like, it's different. And I have to like take that our experiences are also different because in the gay world, you know, adult film stars are praised or sometimes, and like females are also praised and treated like celebrities. But like, I think gay porn stars are a lot more embraced because they are like drag queens. They stem from nightlife, you know, and they are this community. And like for gay people, sometimes before even Drag Race, porn stars were our sense of like gay celebrities, you know, before being gay was like mainstream, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think it comes from a place of empowerment too. Like doing that, something that's still, for a lot of people, largely considered taboo, gay sex in a sense, to be able to do that on film and proudly and in front of people, I think is empowering. I think that's why, you know, people do look up to them. So like now that you've been in the business for, you know, you're what, 28 now? So like 10 years you've been in the business?
No, I would say like, well, yeah, well, no, 28. So like I'm turning 28, so not there yet. So maybe like seven, if we really like were to do it like really correctly.
Do you have any plans to like, how long do you want to continue? Are you going to turn into a daddy and start doing that? I'm kidding. But do you have any plans to get out, or do you just want to ride it till the wheels fall off?
You know, I've kind of just ridden it till the wheels fall off at this point. You know, like it's interesting because we were having this conversation, you know, like there are trends in porn and, you know, you kind of adapt to them, and like it's either people sink or swim at this point. You know, like we saw it when parody porn was a really big thing. Right now it's very amateur. OnlyFans is the new trend right now. So, you know, like whatever that next step is, if I can adapt to it, or, you know, like keep continuing to create and, you know, still be myself, you know, I think you'll very much still see me around.
But do you think OnlyFans is just a trend, or it's here to stay? And also, does it annoy you when you see like young, like regular guys like on OnlyFans making a killing and you're like, well, what the fuck? They didn't put their time in. I had to move out to LA. I had to do all these scenes. I had to go back to Florida.
I think like, you know, whatever floats their boat, you know, I think it's nice that people are working, you know, but you know, it's a different time. I think like they'll never get to experience the things that I did, you know, like I love that environment of like going to set, hair and makeup, you know, like I like the glamour of it. So like, you know, I for me, it's just a different experience that, like, other than that. Thank you.
Oh, do you just get food delivered?
No, delivery package.
Delivery package. All right. Well, you know, I thank you so much for coming on. I just find, like, I read up a little on your story and it was fascinating. And thank you to Abella for connecting us. So you have an OnlyFans, right?
Yes, I do. You can find me at OnlyFans.com/LiamRiley, or for faster, you can find me at theinternetsboyfriend.com.
What a URL, theinternetsboyfriend.com. I love it so much. Well, you have to come back when you're in New York next. We should do like an in-person interview and maybe we can talk a little bit more about some like trending topics and stuff like that. This has been so fun. I'd love to have you in.
Yeah, I'd love that. That'd be so much fun.
All right, Liam. Thanks so much for popping on.
Thank you.
A humongous thank you to Liam Riley for stopping by. He had an incredibly interesting story. And I've found in the past that when you talk to porn stars like people, they open up and they respect you so much more and they have a lot to say. Because a lot of times people just objectify them and talk about them like they're objects, even to their face, which has got to be exhausting and a bit degrading. But what isn't degrading and what is something that everyone needs is Manscaped's Lawnmower 4.0. This is breaking news. It's a PSA that's brought to you by Manscaped.com, a public service announcement, and the news you've all been waiting for, and that is that the Manscaped engineering team has confirmed that they have successfully created the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, which is now available for purchase in the USA and Canada. And guys, you can join the over 2 million men worldwide that trust Manscaped. And with this exclusive offer, you will save 20% off plus free worldwide shipping using code ABOUT at manscaped.com. That's code ABOUT at manscaped.com. And to be completely honest with you, I'm one of the first people that have tried this and I am blown away by the performance, the craftsmanship, and attention to detail on the 4.0. We had the 3.0, now we have the 4.0. Their advanced skin safe technology is so good that it almost seems impossible, like it's been designed by some sort of Elon Musk engineer to ensure that your testes are as safe as possible. The Lawnmower 4.0 gives you the ability to turn on the 400K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more brightened, precise shave. And the new trimmer allows you to even customize your trim through additional guard lengths with sizes 1 through 4. The optimized Lawnmower 4.0 is waterproof, so you can groom in the shower and not have to worry about making a mess on the bathroom floor. Folks, if you're still trimming your face with your ball trimmer, it's about time to make some changes. And right now you can get 20% off plus free shipping with code ABOUT at manscaped.com. Again, 20% off plus free shipping using code ABOUT, ABOUT, at manscaped.com. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. And guys, with summer around the corner, no one wants a hairy nutsack and some pubes. Trim it down. Give yourself the optical inch. Give yourself all the length you can get, all the girth you can get. Take care of yourself. Do it for yourself. Do it for your partner. And Manscaped will help you do that. Manscaped.com, code ABOUT for the Lawnmower 4.0. And with that, we are going to close out this week's episode. So again, thanks to Lana, thanks to Liam, and thanks to all you guys for listening. We always have a great time every week, so keep an eye out for next week's episode on Tuesday, and we will talk to you then. Bye.